At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
We had a question, 206-803-ROCK. Hello, random, Nick. Random, welcome to the Men's Room.
Hey, what's up?
Hola! Nick, welcome to the program. Random question. All right. Okay, let's go with this one. What would you say your favorite and least favorite book that you had to read in school? One you liked, one you hated.
Oh, man, to read in school. I really did not care for Of Mice and Men.
I did not either.
I don't know if I had a favorite. I did take a couple of AP English classes where we got to read some cooler stuff. Like, so
did you read Lord of the Flies?
I did.
Okay, that, I mean, I didn't love the book, but of all the books we had to read, that was probably my favorite. And the truth is, no one in my class was reading it, and the teacher kind of got wind of this. We had, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks, whatever, to read the book. No one had made any progress, and the teacher goes, guys, look, this is Baltimore City. A bunch of boys crash on an island, they start fighting. And that entire class, we dove into it. We were like, oh, you should have told us.
Sweet.
And we ended up reading the book, and everyone enjoyed it just for that reason.
Did you guys have Cliff Notes?
We had Cliff's Notes.
Did you use those?
Absolutely.
Depending on if I liked the book. If I didn't like the book, then I'm using them.
Yeah. I mean, that was my thing.
See, Ted, I think for me it was more the length of it. Dude, do I have time? Or do I want to invest the time in reading this big-ass book?
Because, like, what's the
word? Like, Beowulf is a big book.
It is, and boring.
Canterbury Tales, big book.
And horrible. Old Man and the Sea, small book. I got through 3 pages. I'm like, I'm out. And to this day, I think the book sucks, right? It's just not a book I enjoy. Whatever. Lord of the Flies, I read. My least favorite was, oh, God, what's the one from Shakespeare?
All of them? Oh, this is a comedy.
All of them, but I think, was it Macbeth? Yeah, Macbeth is the one that kept hammering home. And like, look, man, we get the plot. I understand. It's mildly interesting. I don't enjoy the process of reading this. I really don't. And was that supposed to be a comedy? Because
no,
they tell you,
no.
I'm like, if you got to tell someone it's a comedy, it's not fun.
Reese Mass, what was your favorite and least favorite book? A survey of middle and high school instructors shows that the list of books most frequently taught in the classroom has not changed much at all since 1989. And all six of the same books are on both lists.
All right.
So here's the modern top 10. Coming in at number 10, Frankenstein.
I never read that.
I never did either.
Nope. Neither did I.
And I want to say,
I would probably know that Frankenstein is the doctor if I had read the book.
And the thing, my daughter, she's going to high school next year, so she has like that, the reading list of things coming up. Frankenstein's one of the books.
Cool.
I was jealous. I'm like, I would not mind reading that.
Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 comes in at 9th. That was a great book.
Yeah.
And I only got to read that as I went to 8th grade twice, and I'd already done the other books.
What were the other books?
What did we read the year before? Maybe A Wrinkle in Time?
All right. Not bad.
Something else.
Okay.
But then when I got to DeMatha, they had like different classes. So everybody kind of goofed on us, but it was called Study Skills.
Yeah.
A lot of athletes, a lot of people with dyslexia.
Yeah, yeah.
But we would read like, you only had to read a few pages like per week.
Okay.
Because they wanted to make sure we read those books. So like we read like the sequel to Wrinkle in Time. We read Brian's Song, which you've never seen.
Oh, dude.
I had already seen the movie. I know how it ends. But, like, and look, I could show you on my Facebook later some of the size of these dudes I was in this class with. But just see that many giant dudes crying. One guy was like, Miss Karen, why'd you make us read this?
Hamlet is 8. Number 7 is Knight. I don't know if I know Knight.
With a K or an N?
An N.
Ah.
I really have no idea.
I've never heard of that book in my life.
I haven't either.
All right.
6 is To Kill a Mockingbird. I love that book.
Read it. You say that. What happened when you had to do your oral report?
I actually did read the book eventually.
Okay.
You have to understand. at that point in time, I had a lot going on, right? I really did. I played sports, the whole deal.
Uh-huh.
I procrastinated. Lots of practices. But one thing I knew for a fact, was that if you wanted to watch a really good movie based on a book,
yeah,
that was the one to watch. Because I saw that movie because I was library AV,
okay,
period. So I knew, like, what... if a teacher was going to show a movie, that was typically one of them.
Yeah.
And people liked it, you know, that I knew. So I was like, you know what? I am just watching the movie.
Sure, sure.
And it's a great movie. It really is. I mean, but, you know... When you're doing an oral report, you don't cite the actor's name. So when I said, so Gregory Peck, and I'm like, oh, no. The teacher was for me. And I'm like, oh, no. And I'm not sure if that happened with 12 Angry Men or that one.
It
was one of the two.
Gregory Peck rattles a lot easier than Atticus Finch.
It does, you also just told the teacher.
Yes,
I did not read. Yeah. Did you find out what Knight is?
I did. So Knight is a 1960 memoir by, it's either Elie or Eli Weissel, based on his Holocaust experiences with his father in the Nazi German concentration camps.
Five is Of Mice and Men. Four is Macbeth. The Crucible. Three.
God. We read The Crucible.
Any good?
I remember kind of liking that one.
I mean, the story is again, sometimes the story is intriguing. So the story of The Crucible, I don't mind, but the process of reading the book was a labor.
I mean, again, most of the books I liked ended up being because I either went to eighth grade twice or I was in that specific class.
Class, right.
Well, we kind of read books that were like past the required list.
Okay, I got you.
Great Gatsby, number two.
I never read that.
Nope, me either. And Romeo and Juliet is number one.
Oh, God.
So... Now,
I was going to say, but like, what about like the Count of
Monte Cristo?
Yeah,
or a great sandwich.
Edgar Allan Poe's short stories.
Here's my question: why
it's a bang through
the out of the top 10? Why does Shakespeare show up so much? Like, what is
it?
I wish an English teacher would just explain. Like, look, man, you want kids to read? I get it. You want to improve their comprehension? You want to expand their mind? That is cool. That is fantastic. You got 10 books. You insist on putting Shakespeare on there, which I will never understand. But all right, fine. Just give them one and let them pick. You want to read Macbeth? You want to read Hamlet? You want to read Romeo and Juliet? It's the same crap over and over. But why does Shakespeare take up the biggest percentage of the top 10 books? Why can't we kids branch out and read other authors?
Right.
Like, what is the problem with
that? Did you guys read Kafka, The Metamorphosis?
I did not.
Yes.
Okay. I thought that was a great book.
The Inferno? Dante's Inferno?
Yes.
We read that, and then we had to write a chapter for it.
Okay. Oh.
And I remember my teacher was like, there's a lot of feces in your circle.
what is
like a river of feces. There was a lot of feces.
What is,
you really focused in on the feces.
Hey, that's my hell.
What is better, the book or the hot dog? Dante's.
The hot dog.
The hot dog.
Yeah.
Don't they have a hot dog truck?
They do.
It's a hot dog. Oh, you never had one?
No.
Oh, man. Okay.
So, I like reading that. I like reading that book, though.
1989. Here's the top 10. That was today. So, Romeo and Juliet, number one still.
God.
Followed by Macbeth.
Jesus.
The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Nice. 1989. Oh, yeah. I read Huckleberry.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, if you like racism. Julius Caesar.
Got through that one quick.
Four.
Think I'll keep saying it?
To Kill a Mockingbird. Five. Well, I mean, you know if you read it. Six, The Scarlet Letter. Seven, Of Mice and Men. Hamlet. Eight, The Great Gatsby. Nine, and Lord of the Flies.
All right.
Was number 10.
And that ended in 89, you said? I graduated
that was
in 88.
Yeah, I mean, that was our era.
That was. So, again, why is Shakespeare so... There are so many books out there for kids to read, and they can have the message you're looking for, or whatever the F, right? There's a million books, but Shakespeare keeps coming up. And look, doesn't matter how old you are, you're always going to hear about Shakespeare. My kids are familiar with who Shakespeare was and or is. Just give them a book. Just read one. And to say all of his crap is about the same. One is about romance. This one's about a king. This one, it could be the Tempest. It doesn't matter. It's all the same thing. And then it made us. So we had to read. I didn't have to read the Tempest. We were reading something else from Shakespeare. But the high school's drama club put on a performance of the Tempest. And as part of our requirement in English class, we had to go to watch them perform The Tempest. Mm. And this pissed me off in no short order. I was either in ninth or 10th grade. I don't remember. But I just thought, this is so unfair. It's a Friday night. I'm a teenager. Chances are, I'm not getting laid. I'm not doing anything, but it's Friday night. I do not want to be at school. So me and this guy, Matt Clark, we agree to go together, whatever. We sit down, and we knew most of the cast. and they started doing their thing. Now, I've since told my kids this story. My wife was not happy that I shared it, and I told them, if you guys do this, I will kill you, as your grandparents killed me for this. But those little popper, little hand things, looks like little wadded up paper. You throw them on the ground,
a little snap.
Yeah, a little snap thing. So it turns out that those things fit very well in a straw, and that you can use them as a spitball. So we knew going in that this is going to be our thing. And look, looking back, I feel bad because these kids put in the effort to put on this production, but we don't want to be there, right? And I'm a little a-hole, so me and Matt were sitting toward the back of the auditorium, and these things fly, man. So they're doing their performance, you snap on the stage, and they'd stop for 1 second because they're not trying to break character, but they don't know what it is. So they'd all kind of look down in an area, and those things leave very little evidence of having exploded. So we kept doing this, and not one after the other. We'd wait maybe every 2-3 minutes, and you hear these things pop. So now everyone in the auditorium is picking up that something is amiss, and obviously some of the students here are trying to wreck this thing, which we were doing outstanding job of doing that. Well, there's a teacher sitting about 2 rows in front of us, and I don't know how he pieced together that it was us. Now, he didn't say anything, okay, but the play is now going on. And I remember this teacher does like a complete 180 in his seat and just stares at us for about 10 seconds. And he's basically telling us, like, I know what you guys are doing. You need to stop. That's how I accepted this. It's the same thing when you're kind of effing up in a restaurant and your father would just give you a look across the table. It was understood. Whatever you're doing, just stop. And it won't go any further. So the teacher turns back around. But my buddy Matt now goes into panic mode. All right. Because he's like, oh, my God, we're going to get in trouble. So I never teamed up to do anything devious with him again. So to get rid of the evidence, he drops the remaining poppers on the floor. Well, now the play comes, we'll stop, the lights go up, and we're just sitting there. And this teacher, man, we got yanked out of there real quick. Well, the thing is, when they convey this to our parents, I mean, my mother was just, she was beside herself, right? And look, looking back, I understand why she was mad, and I took my lumps for it. But in my head the whole time, I'm like, I still think it was brilliant. And here's the worst part about being me. I still think it was a beautiful, wonderful prank. I'm not saying pull it, but I'm just saying the fact that you can get the trajectory on these things and send them 15 feet away from where you are.
Dead aim.
People look where the sound comes from. So you look down there. When you look at a crowd of 400 people sitting in the auditorium, there's no way to piece together it was us. And like I said, we got through the first intermission. And we lit that thing up again the second time. That teacher figured it out somehow. Matt panicked, dropped them all on the floor at once. That's when the play came to an abrupt end. So the worst part about it was, you go home, you get in trouble. It is what it is. I'm a teen. I'm going to be in trouble. But when I went to school that Monday, man, you would just see the kids that were in the play in the hall and just the looks they gave you. I mean, that's when you're like, you know. Now I feel bad. Random, I knew I was in trouble. Random, now I actually feel bad. And one of the chicks was so hot, too. She had the lead in it. I had no chance. I don't think I had a chance before, but that guaranteed that I had no chance.
Damn.
But kids, listen, if it's not a play, try it. It's great. It is fun. Hello, TJ. Welcome to the men's room.
Hey there, Thrill. I can answer your question, sir.
What question is that?
Why do we do so much Shakespeare?
So much, man. I mean, out of the top 10 books, I want to say on both lists, it was 3 out of 10 are Shakespeare.
Yeah. So I've done theater my whole life. I started in 6th grade. I've been teaching it at a local high school for 28 years. I've directed probably 30 Shakespeare plays, some of the same ones a couple of times. We do Shakespeare because Shakespeare, I know this is stereotypic, but Shakespeare created modern man, if you will. He examined every emotion, every human problem or situation that we could go through. The stuff that the characters in Shakespeare's plays deal with are the same situations that we deal with now. And it's difficult for some people to get through initially because of the language.
Yeah.
But not unlike when you watch House, the TV show,
mm-hmm.
when something horrible happens, he'll say, your husband had a myocardial infarction, and nobody knows what that means. And some character in the show says, what's that mean? And he goes, he had a heart attack. Shakespeare does the same thing. He says stuff in a very poetic, flowery way so that the people that paid a lot of money that were sitting up in the upper stands of the theater could understand him. And then he repeats it for the groundlings, the people like me, standing that paid a penny to get in.
All right, well, let me ask you that. And that makes sense, because I've heard of pretty much all modern literature across the world can be almost traced back to Shakespeare's style, in the sense that you were saying.
Kind of, yeah.
But what I would ask you then is, you know, as a teacher, when you're sitting there in front of a group of, you know, 14, 15-year-old boy, we got zits, right. We're getting erections, we're distracted by girls and all this, and all we want to do is not read Shakespeare. Maybe it's different with you, maybe it's different with other teachers. Not one of my teachers ever just said what you said, which would at least help us stomach the idea of why we're doing it. Because the way we took it is, and like you said, because it's all Middle English or whatever it is, we took it as a punishment. And by the way, just quick side note, you have never heard Shakespeare performed until, not the cast that did the play I Disrupted, but just sitting in class doing the outlaw, until you go to Baltimore City Public Schools. It is an amazing thing to listen to. It is an amazing thing.
It.
But if the teacher...
Well, that's the other thing we do. One of the things we do with Shakespeare, I do, is I try to put it in their world, right? Like with Romeo and Juliet, I heard you make a yuck sound.
Yes.
I tell kids, when Romeo and Juliet first meet, well, let me back up. Romeo is never spoken to by his parents. His parents do not speak to him. They ask his best friend, how's Romeo? But they never speak to him. So he's kind of isolated from his parents, and I explain that. Juliet is being sold off, effectively, married off to a rich kid to help the family. So she's being used. So these are two isolated teens, literally, and then they meet each other, and they fall in lust immediately. They are not in love. They're just looking for a way out. And they meet each other at a party. They see each other, right, across the crowded room. Hi-ho, how you doing? And they want to make out. That's all they want initially. All Romeo and Juliet want initially is to just go into a corner and make out. That's it. And I tell kids that.
Do you tell them that in advance?
And they're like, me too.
I tell them that when we get to that point.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
I work it through.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay, well, you are saying the thing that and again, this is just looking back, right? I'm an adult now, but when you go through school, a lot of kids, it's difficult to justify why a kid is sitting through the thing they're sitting through. So math, they get it. You need to know math. Science, to a degree, they can piece together why they might be learning it. But specifically Shakespeare, you know, the pushback is always like, why am I reading it? In particular, because it's in Middle English, so you're struggling to comprehend.
Correct. That's the hardest part.
And that's the difficult part. So you're saying, well, it's a love story. So I'm already tuned out. But then when I see the language that it's in, I'm like, come on, man. And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's generally the pushback you get from teens. Like, I don't want to read this.
Absolutely. And for the record, I don't see it as a love story. I see it as a tragic situation where a couple of teenagers are just trying to figure their lives out and they make a terrible mistake.
Well, I think we can agree on that for sure.
Totally.
Well, the terrible mistake, the lesson I teach my kids is never get married after the first date. It won't work out.
Jesus. All right.
That's your big takeaway.
How many dates then?
Don't do it. Right. And then, okay, so like Macbeth, right? Here's this guy that is this wonderful human being, according to the king, in the early part of the play. And then he meets three weird women who tell him, you're going to make it. You're going to be the king. And he's like, well, maybe I could be the king, right? And he tells his wife, so this stuff happened to me. And he comes home, and his wife's like, so? And he goes, I don't know whether I should really kill the king because it's kind of a bad thing to do. And she's like, you said you were going to do it. Go for it. We could make it. And he does. And then it snowballs. Because once you kill the king, you got to start covering your tracks, which is why so many other deaths happen.
But see, man,
and it's all about track covering.
Listening to you explain it makes it fundamentally more interesting
than having to read it.
Than when I was reading it. You know what I mean? Like, if you said, hey, man, this is my plot for a movie, I'd be like, right. I like where that's going. That makes sense, man. Cover your tracks because you do this thing. But when you're reading it at the time, you're like, oh, my God, this is dreadful.
Right. It's because here's the other problem, bro. you're listening to 15-year-olds who don't read out loud well to begin with.
Reading out loud.
Shakespeare, which is a bitch to read out loud.
Yes, it is. You are not wrong.
So all of that is happening simultaneously to you while you're sitting there in English class wishing you could go out and have a smoke or make out with somebody. So
you're not wrong.
You're a tough audience.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt, man. Okay. But see, the way you explain it makes sense, and which I appreciate. But again, if you're an English teacher, honest to God, do yourself a favor. Take TJ's advice there, man. Maybe enlighten kids to what it is they're looking for, because then they will read the story. I killed the king, cover my tracks, and you say Macbeth, out.
More of the random question coming up, 206-803-ROCKS.
You're in the men's room.
Cars and kicks, those are your categories. Coming up with your guess is as good as mine at 4:30. In the meantime, it is our random question, 206-803-ROCK.
Random.
Hello,
random,
Gary. Random, welcome to the men's room. Random.
Hola, my brother.
Hola.
Long time listener, couple time caller. Thanks for coming to Tracyton. I know us guys on the Kitsap Peninsula enjoyed you.
Awesome. Dude, it was great. Awesome. It was a really good time.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I think Throw and I said, 10 times that day.
What?
Awesome event. Get home, yeah. Sock.
God almighty.
Jesus. That had nothing to do with rubber.
No, no. All right, Gary, let's go with this one. Based on your education, did your education help you? Do you believe as far as your job?
Of course it did.
Okay.
Yes.
What did you do there?
I had after my 20 years in the Navy as a Navy Chief Petty Officer Air Crewman, I decided to go into the science world. So I went to school and learned about fishies. So fishes, not feces.
Oh, I wasn't sure, man. Yeah.
Poo on you.
That's a Bremerton joke.
I went to work for the Washington State Fish and Wildlife. And
awesome.
After college, I got a biology degree in fisheries. I worked for Oregon State, which I retired from in 2023. I'm sitting on my back porch sucking down a men's room IPA and talking with you boys.
Nice.
There you go.
Awesome. What was the best part of your job working for the wildlife and fisheries?
Meeting with the people. I remember we used to go to, like, fishing derbies, you know, state-sponsored and such. It was the teaching the dads that didn't know how to fish how to teach their kids how to fish.
Okay.
That's what gave me the best, you know? I mean, when you're walking around, I'm picking up trash, watching everybody, and the dad comes up and says, teach me how to do this so I can teach my kid. I was like, you got it, brother.
Yeah, that's
what,
cool.
What is the, Gary, what's the one thing that people eat that you would say you probably shouldn't? Like sturgeon
what do you
or something.
Mean by,
well, I mean, just like, don't eat that.
Well, you know? Yeah, you go to a seafood restaurant, right? What do you like?
That's a 70-year-old animal. Should you be eating that? That kind of a thing.
No, don't eat, don't eat marlin, swordfish. They're highly pelagic and they pick up all the crud that the little guys built because they're apex predators.
Right.
Don't eat sharks.
Is that because of mercury?
It's mercury. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mercury.
We had that. We were
and PCPs. Don't forget about the PCPs.
There was a restaurant
acid.
I worked at.
What are PCPs?
Acid.
They're in the fish too.
Yeah, all the plastics and stuff. We worked at a restaurant. Yeah. It was a seafood restaurant, and I can't remember if it was marlin or swordfish, but at the time, and we ran it as a special. It was not on the menu as normal, but we knew it was coming, and we're talking to the chef, and we're like, hey, man, everything we're reading right now, like, this is kind of the last thing you want to eat. And he's like, well, you know, it is what it is. People don't have to order it. Fine. So we get the stuff
don't
delivered.
Don't candle it. Did you ever candle it?
Yes, we had to handle. We're filleting this stuff, and I remember
candle. Candle, not handle. Candle it.
Candle it. Yeah, dude.
What does that mean to candle it?
Check it out. That means to shine a light among a fillet and see how many worms are in there.
Well, that was what I was going to tell you. We had to pull the worms out with tweezers, but the worms that we saw were like this bright blue. Dude, it was so gross. I can't.
Ooh.
Yeah, we had to make a pile. So as we're cleaning all this fish out, man, there's a pile of these weird blue worms, some still moving, most not. And I'm like, we're serving this. And Chef's like, yep, I would not eat that if my life depended on it.
Gary, did any of your military experience help with your school?
No, I was an air crewman. I did stuff that I can't tell you about and, you know, jumped in the water and did stuff like that and hauled stuff. I met Noriega. I called you guys about that. I met Manuel Noriega.
I do remember.
He no longer exists. I was a firefighter as well, which is kind of strange. I was a unique breed in the Navy. My rating was firefighting, but I was a naval air crewman.
Okay.
I don't have that anymore. Air crewman is a rating now.
How many fires did you put out?
Oh, jeez. I fought those things. I was ankles deep in Jet A1 fuel on the USS Nimitz during the Gulf War. It was pretty bad. We didn't catch fire then. Most of my fires were training. The only one I really had to put out was a helicopter that landed hard. And that one, we poked it out real quick. That was during my early days, back in the 80s.
All right. Well, Gary, you've had a hell of a life.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Reason we asked, did your education help you? A growing share of Gen Z workers are now questioning whether college delivers on its promise. So, according to a new report from Resume Genius, nearly one in four Gen Z employees say higher education was not worth it, while almost one in five feel their degree did not help their career at all.
I absolutely believe it.
Now, they say, while most in the particular demographic have pursued some form of college, many are now second-guessing whether it actually paid off, especially those who did not major in the fields like STEM or healthcare, but among
specific stuff
and medical grads, 87% did find their degree helpful. But that figure drops to 51% for those in arts, humanities, and social sciences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Except it's not like science specific. I think a lot of times people go to school because the places that hire say it's required. Even though, you know, like my brother, I get electrical engineering. Like, this is a very specific thing. He knew he was interested. It's understandable why you go to school for that. But like you said, if you're doing something in the humanities or arts or philosophy, blah, 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 maybe it helps you, but it won't be worth the money you spent to get it. Maybe that's the way to put it.
They have given a do-over. Many Gen Zers say they would choose a different path. Maybe a more lucrative field. Trade, less expensive school, or basically just jumping straight into entrepreneurship. But still not everyone is delusioned. About a third are satisfied with their educational choices, and those that hold a master's degree tend to be the most content, though they also wish
because
that
there's a pay difference. My brother had a bachelor's in electrical engineering, and he was working, like I said, not at NASA, but whoever they subcontract to. And they said, we want to promote you. He says, cool. But basically, our company policy is you have to have your master's degree. They paid for him to get his master's at Hopkins, and when he was done, his pay increase was substantial.
Almost all said they wish they would have spent less on tuition.
Yep.
Gen Z is also redefining what a successful career looks like. More than half hold a side hustle, and another quarter are considering one, often just out of financial necessity, creative interest, or desire to build something on their own. So side gigs based on the fact that they're just interested in the field or they need the money. They just want to do it.
But you can understand needing the money because, you know, when you look at things, inflation and everything else severely, severely outpaces pay.
Correct.
So even if you, quote unquote, have a decent paying job, the cost of things around you goes up all the time exponentially, right? So you end up having to do your side hustle or a second job or something just to make ends meet, just to buy normal stuff like groceries.
Right.
For Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I also think there's some people that like to do that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But like, and granted, it's just in the article, but I hate that. It's like, oh, you need a side hustle. Like, no, they need jobs that pay a living wage.
Right. That's
people
literally
shouldn't have to work two jobs. You know?
That's it. Right. But yeah. God, we went to the grocery store.
Now, I know some people that will do extra jobs all the time. Just because
they like the extra money, but it's not necessarily. Man, we went to the when we got back from Florida and just kind of re-upped the groceries. I could not believe how much everything costs.
It's ridiculous.
And my wife said, "Why does everything cost so much?" I said, "Because this is the truth of capitalism. Mark. Certain things cost more because that is the situation, right? Whether it's eggs because all this crap's going on, but once everyone else knows you expect to pay more at the grocery store, even those things that don't need to jack up the price to make the cost, they're going to jack up the price because you go with the expectation to pay more. It's that simple, right? So I could jack up the price of Pop-Tarts. There's no reason I need to. But if you're going to the grocery store believing that you're already going to spend more on groceries, I'm going to jack up the price. You don't single me out. I'm just another face in the crowd of expensive groceries. I will say the one thing that I've noticed that irritates me, all right? So we go to the grocery store, you get a couple paper bags for the purposes of recycling. Before you had to pay for them, they were whatever size they are. Have you noticed how much shorter they are now?
Oh, they definitely got smaller.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Now that you pay for them, so think about it. Now that you have to pay to get the paper bag, and look, it's not like they overcharge you $10 million, 5 cents, 2 cents, whatever. But, yeah, man, we'll take out 3 paper bags. So it's just 15 cents. But you add that up over millions of customers in the course of a day. I mean, they're making bank on this. So the thing is, my recycling container in our little recycling drawer thing in the kitchen, it is the same size, okay? So we've been going through the old bags, and it goes to the top. And I want to say those recycling containers are even designed with the idea that you put a standard grocery paper bag in there. So I put a bag in last week and looked at my wife. I'm like, what's up with this bag? She's like, what do you mean? I said, it's maybe 3/4, probably closer to 60% as tall. I figured maybe we just got some short bags. Now that we're going through them all the time, I'm like, these sons of bitches are making the bags small. Now that they charge you money for them, they give you less bag.
Well, when
the
bags were
free, they were what?
Those paper bags always charge you.
No, they do, but they didn't always. Remember that, especially here in Seattle, because it used to be, hey, man.
Right. But I'm saying, like, the bags got smaller recently.
Yeah.
Like, I've been paying for those damn bags.
No, we've been paying for them. I'm saying it occurred to someone going, hey, you realize people, probably the last 5-10 years, we've been paying for it. But somebody in corporate said, dude, they're already paying for it. We can make a bigger profit off of this if we give them less bag. And I understand it's just a paper bag. But it's the point where it's like, are you kidding me, man? Mm-hmm, so seriously, yeah, your paper bags are shorter than they used to be. Paper bag. Can we win? And there's probably a reason why. Because you go to the grocery store, you're buying your grocery. You need to buy more bags to accommodate your same number of groceries.
Yeah.
So they can make an extra 10 cents off of you. But again, when you add that up in the course of a day, a week, a month, a year, they're making bank. And I'm just like, Jesus, is anything freaking safe?
Random.
Can I just get a paper bag, man?
Random.
Hello, Jeff. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola from Olala.
Hola. Hola. Hola.
Jeff, welcome to the program. And the random question. Let's go with this one. Jeff, when you were born, do you know your stats at birth? As far as how much you weighed, what your length was, any of that stuff?
I had an enormous head. That's about it.
An enormous head. Is that something your parents told you? Or, I mean, you could probably look in the mirror and figure it out. But did your mother have a habit of bringing it up?
Oh, the family picture my brothers show me to this day of me as a little baby with a big head.
Oh, no. As big as yours?
But you don't know how much you weighed.
I was like 8 pounds-ish.
Okay. Well, it's not too bad. That's about an average now, I guess.
Yeah. I was 9 pounds, 11 ounces.
God damn. I was 7 pounds, 5 ounces.
10 even.
10 pounds?
Yes.
Damn, bro.
You how about your brother and your sister? Same idea or
no? No, they were little baby. They were little tiny babies. They were like 8 pounds.
Mike, do you know?
I have no clue.
You don't know what you weighed?
I have no idea what I weighed.
Huh.
I feel like for whatever reason got beaten in my head. It's like that was the first stat I could tell you about. I can tell you my name, my birthday, and I was 7 pounds, 5 ounces.
Well, in all fairness, I don't remember 19 inches what my kids were.
I couldn't tell you, man.
I mean, I was just happy they got there.
Yeah. I think both of my kids were around the 7 to 8 pounds.
Now, my daughter
range.
Was a little puny one because she was a little bit messed up.
Yeah.
So she was like 5-something. But the other kid was like normal.
Do you remember what time they were born? I get one.
People ask that all the time.
I sure do.
Like people that are into astrology, it's always like, what exact time, day of the week was it? Like, I don't know. I'd have to look at my birth certificate.
I think so, it was between 2 and 4 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Yeah, one of my kids was in the middle, like you, kind of early morning kind of thing. And the other one, I want to say my daughter may have been the one kind of middle of the night, and I think my son was like 6 in the afternoon, or it's vice versa. I don't remember.
Got home from work Monday afternoon. Water breaks, gather all the stuff. I do remember my wife said, I need a lemonade. And I'm like, all right. So we're driving to the hospital, and I pull into the Royal Farms, and of course, which is a convenience store. There are 5 people in line.
Mm-hmm.
I go grab the lemonade, and I walk up to the counter, and I said, sir, I am not kidding. My wife, her water just broke. she just wants this lemonade. Is it okay if I cut in front of you? He's like, sure, man, absolutely. So the woman who was in line, she went out to check on my wife.
Check on your wife or see if you're telling the truth.
Just to make sure. I don't know if she's a nurse. Mm-hmm. But she got out of line, went outside, talked to her. Like, are you having contractions? I think she might have been a nurse.
All right.
So give her the lemonade. We get to the hospital, the Pat Sajak Hospital.
I love that.
Like, seriously, Pat Sajak. And she is just not having a good time at all. Like, she is really, really just in a terrible mood.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is my fault. We get into the room, and they give her an epidural.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first normal signs of my wife that I've seen, as far as not being like frantic and crazy and mean. They stick that thing in, and she goes, oh, yeah. Isn't the Monday night football game on?
Oh.
And I was like, well, yeah. Do you want to put it on? Yeah, is this a setup?
Right.
Sure.
Get her another shot.
Sure.
Are you serious? Can I take some of this home?
And then I remember I turned on. It was Colts Peyton Manning. I definitely remember that. So I know it was a Monday night starting at 9 on the East Coast. So it was sometime after that.
Yeah. I watched college football. I can't remember if it was my son or my daughter, but it was Saturday afternoon. College football was on. And look, I was dying to watch it, but I'm smart enough not to say anything. But same thing, my wife's like, you know college football's on. I'm like, okay, let's put it on.
Game on. Yeah. Game on. Reason we asked, what were your stats at birth? Here we go. Big things are happening. A newborn entered the world July 16th, tipping the scales at 12 pounds, 9 ounces. Also, the kid was 23 inches long.
God.
Now, this happened in Newport News.
Born at 18 months or something?
With a 401k?
college education. Beats out a girl born in 2020 who weighed 12 pounds, 2 ounces. A lot of people are saying, my son, he's going to have an NFL scholarship, according to his proud dad, Brandon.
Of course the dad said
His parents.
Yeah. The mom's like, my vagina hurts.
They're delighted
dad's
to
like,
celebrate.
That's an NFL player right there. Yeah.
Hello. delighted to celebrate the birth of their new son, although they were surprised by his size. The last ultrasound at 35 weeks said he was 6 pounds. Now, the follow-up, while she was in labor, by the way, he was born 1 week late.
Okay. Still, man, that's a lot of growing in a week.
Basically, but that's what happens when you leave stuff in the oven.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, they went from 6 to 7 pounds to, again, 12 pounds. The kid doubled.
God, man.
But a little overproofed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dad, by the way, is 6'3". So he says it's understandable his babies are supersized. He said, my babies have always been on the larger side.
But what do you weigh? Like, I'm tall, right? I'm 6'4", but my kids are still 8 to 9 pounds. If dude weighs like 320 naturally, you go, okay.
It just depends on how you disperse it.
Yeah, I guess.
How long were your kids when you were born? You remember it all?
How long? Well, my son,
you know
I'll
what
tell
they, you. How tall were they?
They, I mean, just normal, man. So I was, 19? So they were probably anywhere from 19 to 21 inches long, okay. Which I think is fairly standard. They were dead average.
His other kid's 8 pounds, 9 pounds, 7 pounds, 9 ounces. So he is, his other son was 11 pounds, 1 ounce.
Yeah!
This guy, he's getting it done. Your guess is as good as mine. Count up the categories, cars and cakes at 4:30, and your email's on the way next from the men's room at KISW.com.